Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the third episode of Playboys. BJ, how are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great, actually, because we're going to talk about one of my favorite plays today.
Indeed we are. And that is?
The Comedy of Errors.
Good Lord. One of Shakespeare's early plays. All right.
One of his early plays, and I think maybe one of his his shortest play, actually.
Right, yeah. It's one of his... Yeah, I think so, right? Definitely one of his shortest plays. So let's get straight to it, The Comedy of Errors. So do you want to start then? Because I feel this is really your choice. I feel like I want to let you.
I really wanted this. To do this one. I think it's my favorite or maybe my second favorite, but it's right up there as one of his best plays, like for what I'm looking for from Shakespeare.
So tell us why.
It's just so farcical. It's genuine comedy, and this is something that people don't expect, and you get this a lot when you read Greek comedies. People think like it's too old to like actually still be funny or something, but it's not. Yeah. It's just absolutely hilarious, and you know, I don't know why anyone wouldn't realize that if you read it. It's your typical farce. Like, it is the ultimate farce of mistaken identity and just faffing about. Just people, you know, going through all sorts of ridiculous... I think, like, your standard British sitcom mirrors this, you know.
Basically.
Just where there's, like, a lot of farce and a lot of things that escalate and escalate and escalate until you realize what's going on at the end. Standard kind of sitcom format. And that's what's happening in this play.
It's awesome, yeah. I know, I love it. And it is very funny. So the whole thing is people think of Shakespeare, oh, how dull, and they might think of, you know, all the histories and very serious kind of stuff. But this is just... It's only like
Henry
85
sixth, part 100.
Part 110. And this is just a funny slapstick comedy. So basically, if you're into slapstick and you want to go back to the origins, not that Shakespeare invented slapstick, but that he perfected it. And the English kind of British slapstick is very much influenced, as you were saying, Dean, by the Comedy of Errors and other Shakespeare comedies. But particularly Comedy of Errors is very slapstick. Very much kind of like ridiculous. How can this happen? Yet it does happen. And yeah, the whole comedy...
It's his silliest play. It really is his silliest play. And with it also being his shortest, I think if anyone does think Shakespeare is dry, this is one to try.
Yeah, it's great.
It's short and it's silly. So if you're not sold on Shakespeare, I would say just to start with this one.
Awesome, yeah. And do you want to go ahead? What is it about?
So basically we have... I mean, just the very situation, the very premise is almost impossible. But we have a merchant in Syracuse, Aegeon, and he has a son. He actually has two sons who are identical twins, separated at birth, both with the same name, Antipholus of Ephesus and Antipholus of Syracuse, both of whom have attendants who are also identical twins, also separated at birth, and also with the same name, Dromio of Ephesus and Dromio of Syracuse.
Set in ancient Greece also as well, guys.
In ancient Greece.
And these parents are taking care of their own kids and two kids that were born at the same time, all both of them twins. What a coincidence. And they all have the same names, the first ones and the servant ones.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, you know. But basically, the idea is, and they do say what happened in the play, they were on a boat and they get separated and the mother and one of the sons get separated. And they find these two other little boys and basically say, these boys can be servants to our boys because that seems fair and just. And then they all get separated and that's what happens. So the father hasn't seen the mother now in a long, long time. Do you mind? I know we don't normally give spoilers, but can I just explain what happens to the mother? Because it just adds to the overall wackiness of the premise.
Ah, Dean, do you really want to spoil that?
I think I do. No.
I wouldn't do it if I... You know what I think about spoilers? But let's just
it just makes the whole thing more ridiculous.
It is very ridiculous, people. But no, you can't do that, Dean, because that's
okay,
right.
I won't spoil it. You got to read the play, but we do need the mother. That's the most.
And I've got to say, if there's one thing about Comedy of Errors, it might be something that's a bit predictable, just sometimes, I feel like. But not the mother part, definitely not. So I wouldn't.
That's a swerve, yeah.
Even the predictable parts,
it's like... It's like watching your favorite comedy show when you do kind of know what the jokes are going to be, but you still like them when they come. You know,
it's great. It's hilarious. That's fantastic. And they're still, guys, still realistic. You know what I mean? They're kind of like, it's like, how could this have happened? But if there were actually two exactly identical twins, I could imagine this happening. Yeah. Yeah.
I can imagine it happening on a reduced level. You know, having two servants who are also identical twins is a little bit much. But
if you just accept that premise, right? That's the whole thing about Shakespeare. If you just accept the premise, that might be a bit fantastical, like in The Tempest in the previous episode. Then you can kind of get along with it and don't feel it's too illogical.
Yeah,
but yeah. Anyway, do you want to go ahead? So these two twins, these two pairs of twins, are separated. One Dromio, one Dromio and one Antipholus, and another Dromio and one Antipholus. One is with the dad, they go to Syracuse, and the other is with the mom, they go to Ephesus, right?
Ephesus.
Do you want to go ahead? What happens then?
Yeah, so basically the Syracusan Antipholus goes to just check out the market, I guess, in Ephesus with his attendant, despite the fact that anyone who goes there is subject to pain of death. So his father, Aegeon, who is a merchant, also goes, and the Duke says, basically, you're not allowed to come into our city on pain of death. We have to kill you, but, like, you're a splendid chap, and I don't want to kill you. So try to raise enough money to pay the fine by tomorrow, but if you don't, I do actually have to kill you, even though I don't want to. So.
What a great lad, right?
But no one notices that his son is also there, because his son's identical with the guy who lives there. So no one stops him or tries to fine him or kill him, because they think it's the other guy. And then we just have myriad shenanigans where people confuse the two Antipholuses. There's a merchant, there's a goldsmith, called Angelo, who gives him a chain. But then, you know, he gives it to the wrong guy and he's like, oh, I'll take the chain, of course, no problem. And then, you know, when he asks for payment, the guy's like, I didn't even get the chain. Why are you asking me to pay you for a chain I didn't get? And that's just one example of like a lot of things where he's got a courtesan that he goes to visit. And then it's, you know, she mistakes him for the other one. And there's just a lot of confused identity.
Because the premise is that, you know, the Syracusan Antipholus is there to visit the market, although it's also suggested that he is actually searching for his brother and mother, but he's there and he looks identical to the Antipholus of Ephesus. Is it Ephesus or
Ephesus?
If I can ever pronounce that name, Ephesus. But he's already established a life, so when they see his twin brother who's just visiting, they assume it's him, and it's just ridiculous because you know, Antipholus of Ephesus and Dromio of Ephesus, they both have wives. Well, Dromio is engaged to the cook, yes, and it's all kind of like ridiculous because they're not in love with these women. And in fact, it gets even more ridiculous when Antipholus of Syracuse falls in love with the sister of his wife.
Yes, he falls in love with his presumed wife's sister, and then that's a whole mess as well.
Anyway, I just basically, the whole premise is that it's kind of like you can't really give too much away, I suppose, but you can kind of.
It's just slapstick and jokes, really, with people confusing them for who they are.
The wife
wants to know why he's, you know, disowning her for her sister. Yeah. The goldsmith wants paid. There's just a lot of things like that. And then there's a big get up over shit. The wife takes the wrong guy to dinner. So then, you know, they think the guy's crazy because he's saying, like, I didn't eat with my wife. You know, we were having a fight. I'd gone off to my courtesan or whatever. And then. Yeah. They're saying, well, actually, you know, I'm a witness that, you know, he did eat dinner with his wife and all this kind of thing. But this guy, there's almost a magical element, because the Syracusan Antipholus and Dromio, they think they've stepped into Midsummer Night's Dream. They think they're in some kind of weird dream world.
In fairyland, right?
Okay, we don't know what's happening here.
And they're kind of lucky, right, as well. Kind of lucky things happen to them. you know, they get chains, they get all kinds of things, but they're very confused. And Dromio of Syracuse asks, "Am I thy Dromio?" And Antipholus is like, "Yeah, thou art my Dromio." And they're like, again, there's this loss of identity that's similar to Midsummer Night's Dream happening. There is, especially
it gets confusing and it gets dreamy. And these chaps, you know, they think, well, we've stumbled into some strange time that they just want to give us things. Like, they're treating us like a really highly respected citizen, even though they don't know us. The wife wants to have free dinner with me. This person's interested in me. The guy's giving me gold chains. Like, brilliant. This is the best thing ever. And then they book a ship and say, like, let's leave before, you know, anything bad happens. So then everyone thinks the real Antipholus is trying to leave without, you know, paying for the chain and doing this and that. So it's just a whole, you know, it is literally a comedy of errors. It's just a series of confusions and errors. But the thing we haven't mentioned is that the Antipholus's and Dromios also get separated. So then there's a lot of confusion between them.
Because even them, even though technically they were raised together, at least the ones from Ephesus and the one from Syracuse, they can't even identify their own Dromios and Antipholus. Antipholi. And it's kind of like just, and there's a lot of beating going on, a lot of beating. Slapstick kind of Lauren Hardy kind of, I'm beating you, like Antipholus is beating Dromio and Dromio is confused because Dromio, you know, one Antipholus wants a rope's end. One of them wants money, and he wants the money, but Dromio brings him a rope's end, and it's all very ridiculous.
Then everyone just constantly thinks they're being swindled or robbed, basically throughout the play, because of all the mistaken identities, and the poor Dromios just get beaten, you know, all around the place, because that's the physical comedy.
It's great though. It's just a series of events related to how mistaken identities. But basically that's it. It's just a mistaken identity and loss of identity. Because, I mean, I feel like the Dromio and Antipholus of Syracuse, from the beginning, they're the more philosophical pair. They're the ones in search. They're the ones on their odyssey. While the other pair, Dromio of Ephesus.
The Ephesian ones, they're at home, but they're struggling more. They're actually bearing the punishment for a lot of things.
that the guys from Syracuse are doing. But basically, they're questioning, at least Antipholus and Dromio of Syracuse are questioning their own identity. They kind of maybe not believing anymore that they exist or they are the persons who they thought they were. And they're very confused. And it's just great. And so that does have a philosophical thread going on. And I particularly love the beginning of the play. Aegeon's the father's speech about how they got lost. I thought that's a very dramatic, very visual description. That's not so comedic, actually. It's not so funny, really. That's more of a kind of a serious, kind of the Tempest-esque kind of storytelling.
There's a Tempest kind of moment in it as well as a Midsummer Night's Dream vibe. I mean, this play almost links to our two previous plays, although it's much earlier, just in some of the elements in it, you know.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, and that's the thing about Shakespeare. You can always see elements of his other plays. I mean, you could see elements of Puck, for example, and Ariel, The Tempest, even though it's much later, for example. So you can always see these characters reappearing, and especially with the woman characters, you can see reappearing. I mean, here you've got the sister, who's a very strong sort of feminist, sort of kind of she doesn't want men character. And you've got Adriana, the wife of Antipholus, who's more kind of, she just wants to do her duty. And there's a lot of comedic elements between them because they always rhyme when they talk with each other, Adriana and Luciana.
They always rhyme, yeah. I forgot to mention that.
Adriana and Luciana, yeah. There's a lot of rhymes going on there.
Their names rhyme, and when they speak in rhyming couplets. I don't know why.
And it's just, I don't know. It's like almost like a comedic sort of.
Well, actually, they speak in rhyming couplets to a point, and then at the end of their section, they switch to like an A-B-A-B rhyme scheme for the final kind of part of the speech.
Oh, okay.
And that happens every time they have a dialogue. I don't know why. It adds to the comedy almost.
It's another comedic element. Yeah, no, I think.
But I feel for Adriana. I think she's one of the. I mean. She you get a bit of sympathy for her just because she doesn't know why her poor husband is just being an ass to her, basically, and disowning her and saying that he doesn't want her. And, you know, it's horrible, really, at times for her.
And not just that, but also at the end, her actual husband is very kind of violent and mean to her. Her actual husband, because by that point, the actual husband thinks that Adriana, the wife, is trying to punish him, trying to make him look bad. And it doesn't. they don't seem to reconcile. I mean, there's no reconciliation really between the couples, right? And there's not, the ending is a bit, I don't want to explore the ending, but the ending is in some parts kind of unfinished, I feel like. That's maybe one thing I have to say about the ending.
Yeah, it wraps up, like, it is his shortest play. He could have added a little bit to it to wrap up the ending, but maybe he felt like he didn't need it, you know? Maybe you're just meant to figure it out yourself. You know, it's one of those things where once they realize there's been some identity confusion, it just kind of ends. And it just, you know, just let it wrap, you know, sort itself out, basically.
Yeah, and yeah, no, I think it's great. It's unusual to see, I feel like, even nowadays, to have two twins working together on stage. I mean, I don't even see that anymore. That seems like a very kind of unique aspect to it. I mean, a lot of the slapstick elements have stayed with Lauren Hardy, for example, but it's usually just two people, not four. And I love that there's an interplay constantly with the confusion of, like, all four get confused. And the thing in the play is Dromio never meets Dromio. Antipholus never meets Antipholus until the end, to wrap it up. So that's a bit of a Shakespeare. That's handy, isn't it? That's very handy. So that's the, I mean, like, because obviously if they met, then there'll be like, that'll be the end of the play. And but it has to happen.
Yeah, well, that's it. If they met earlier, then there's no need for the rest of the play. So they can't, you know.
Yeah, no, I love it. Yeah, and by the way, it's the only play along with The Tempest that observes the Aristotelian principle of the unity of time, which is basically
all in one day, in 24 hours. Day.
So people back then, they used to really respect that. Aristotle in Poetics, I think it was, said that a play should occur within one day, within 24 hours. And Tempest, which we talked about in the previous episode, did that. That was the whole point of the play, actually, that he gets Prospero gets everything done that he needs to do within those 24 hours. And in this case, I don't feel it was necessary, but nevertheless, I suppose realistically, how long can these comedy of error like live? Because I mean, it's a comedy of errors up to an extent, but I don't think you can go around like a week and not seeing your twin brother.
Yeah, exactly. So, the fact that it takes place in one day makes it believable, actually.
Yeah.
Because you might not see that person in that day, but you can't continue that indefinitely. Like, the confusion can only last for a few hours, really, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, I just feel so bad for the real, everyone thinks everyone's insane. You know, these guys think, I've landed in a town where people are just giving us things. I don't know why, but that's fine. And then the two, you know, the Dromios and the Antipholuses, they're constantly saying, but I ask you for this. Why have you brought me that? What have you done with the money? Why are you giving me a rope? Why, where's the ship? Everyone thinks everyone else is going crazy. What's happening? The real Dromio thinks, like, my wife has kicked me out. You know, what's happening here? They want to arrest me. Like, what is going on? Like, it's just no one knows what's happening.
It's pretty insane. Yeah. No, I love it a lot. And there's a lot of great quotes I find in this play, right? It's a very quotable kind of play, very witty. But it's all like, it's all that kind of like, you need at least two people to like react always. It's that kind of play, just like Waiting for Godot, for example. But for example, one of my favorite ones is where Dromio of Syracuse describes his not wife, but like his wife, his brother's wife thinks obviously Dromio of Syracuse is her husband. And she's supposed to be quite rotund. Is that a nice way of saying it, Dean? Is that the way?
I think that'll do, yeah.
If I can just say it, he says, no longer from head to foot than from hip to hip. She is spherical, like a globe. I could find out countries in her. And Antipholus of Syracuse and then goes on to ask like every country all the main countries of Europe and the New World and what part of the body you can find it in her body. And he says, in what part of her body stands Ireland? Marry, sir, in her buttocks. I found it out by the bogs. Oh, Lord. And it's just great. And it just goes on and on and on. It's like, where is Spain? Faith, I saw it not, but I felt it hot in her breath. Where stood Belgia, the Netherlands? Oh, sir, I did not look so low. So it's like, it's all, it's great. It's a great comedy. And I really recommend it. It's got that philosophical element as well, as do all Shakespeare's
comedies. I think it's perfect. I think it's a perfect play. It's short. It's to the point. It's very funny. It's a really good intro play. There's nothing really heavy. You don't need a lot of pre-knowledge going in. It's just a nice, fun, lighthearted play. And it can't possibly really be offensive. You know, it's just the mistaken identities are just funny, and that's it, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So, guys, if you want to have some fun, if you want to take a nice breather and just take it nice and easy within your Shakespeare studying month of April and May, mate, why don't you read the Comedy of Errors and just have some
Put
fun?
Put down Henry VI, part 5003, and just read. No, just read a little bit of Comedy of Errors, you know?
Exactly. Just nonsense, basically. Just nonsense, yeah. If you like Father Ted, for example, if you like Lauren Hardy, well, then you're going to like the Comedy of Errors. And it's just one
Pretty
more.
Much.
Yeah. And it's not just Shakespeare, also plenty of Greek plays, which we'll get into as well. There's plenty of comedy in them. And I mean, to be funny after all these years is quite astounding, I find. It just shows you that real funniness does not die, you know. You know,
sometimes we lose a little bit in context, but pure humor doesn't change.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And it's
this play could take place conceivably in a modern time.
Definitely,
update the language a little bit and one or two of the references, it would still work.
Exactly.
And that's the thing.
So no, I highly recommend it.
Cool. I think that's us then.
All right. Well then,
guys. Do you want to reveal the next play or is it going to be a secret?
You go ahead, Dee, because it's another one of your choices. So
okay, the next play is As You Like It.
As You Like It.
So far, PJ is not liking it, but we'll find out.
Ah, no, it's I'm not liking as much as I did the Comedy of Errors. It's my first read, guys. Haven't quite finished yet, but still, there's plenty of things I'd like to talk about with you, Dean. About it's quite interesting.
We'll be back with that one next time. Don't forget, everyone. You can follow us on booksboys.com, and on there's links to all of our other projects and social medias and everything like that. And of course, email us booksboys@hotmail.com as well. And I think that is us.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Ciao.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.